Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. Most of our previous podcasts in this series have been fiction, but EQMM also occasionally publishes poetry, mostly short humorous poems, but also lyric poems that convey an emotional response to crime or mystery, and even epic poems that tell a story in verse. In the recording that follows, you'll hear some examples pulled from our pages of each of those types of poem. Poetry is meant to be read aloud, and I was reminded of that as I heard these selections, familiar to me from several previous print readings, given sound and life either by their authors or by EQMM's managing editor, Jackie Sherbo. Jackie is herself a poet, whose first volume of poems, Harbinger, was published by Finishing Line Press in November of 2019. Hers is the voice that returns to read several of the poems in this podcast. I'll let the other author readers identify themselves as they give voice to their verse.
This is a story of the Yukon. It's told in verse. It's by John F. Dobbin, and it's simply titled Brothers. They used to make jokes, all the boys in the bar. Oh, I know that they meant him no harm, but behind his big grin there was pain in his eyes, and to end it I'd give my right arm. My brother and me, we came north from St. Joe to run traps before the Yukon got tame. He was normal back then, and the size of two men with a heart about as big as his frame. I loved that old cuss, and the best part for us was the freedom to roam as we will through a wild, icy realm only God could create, where the world is froze breathless and still. We learned to track beaver and seals through the ice and to steer by the great northern lights from the Eskimo nomads who'd treat us like gods because they still had no fear of the whites. They told us of valleys locked off by the ice, and the old ones would always insist they'd seen beaver with pelts that were white as the snow, though God knows if they really exist. My brother was kind of an overgrown kid, and the thought of those pelts drove him mad. He'd have gone it alone, and I couldn't have that, so we sold every pelt that we had and bought us some dogs that were bred to survive where a polar bear'd freeze in the womb. We set out on a quest that I wish we'd forgot, and we mushed into God's icy tomb. The tale of that trek is a nightmare and more. Even now it brings pain to recall how we lost one by one every dog that we had, but that wasn't the worst of it all. We came too close to death just to walk away clean. Things would never get back where they'd been. We got out with our lives, but my brother had been broke. He was never quite normal again. By the time we were physically good as we'd get, it was clear that our wild days were done. My brother Bill's brain wasn't up to the games that are played by the ice, wind, and sun. He had lost all the feeling in both of his hands, and his fingers were rigid as wood. The feeling was slow to come back to the palms, but the fingers were stone cold for good. We moved to the south to a town that sprang up like so many when gold was the cry, and we got into the business of dealing in furs with the trappers who used to come by. To sleep under a roof and to live in four walls, well, to tell you the truth, it was hell. For two wild, wind-driven spirits whose roof was the stars. But we tried, and the business did well. I guess looking back, we had three peaceful years. Like they say, God just filled up our cup. But it came to be clear that I'd have to go south to look after some things that came up. I hated the thought because it meant leaving Bill, and I wasn't quite sure he could cope. But an offer came through that I couldn't refuse, and I figured there might be some hope, because a wrinkled old cuss with the nickname of Doc had an office for peddling pills. No one knew if he had a license to trade, but he treated most everyone's ills. He had taken a shine to this brother of mine, always kind, though my brother was slow. So when I had to leave, it was Doc who came through with a promise to keep him in tow. With that put to rest, I lit out for the west, to the coast, and a ship to the States. I was plagued by the thought of my brother alone, so I booked on the earliest dates. Still, the journey was long and the meetings were slow. It took weeks just to get the right deals. By the time I mushed back through that last 100 miles, the winter was hard on my heels. You know how you sometimes can feel in your bones a chill that you can't quite explain? Just as soon as I drove past the outskirts of town, I could sense it was under a strain. From the men on the street to the girls by the bar, even kids that came up to so high, there wasn't a one as I drove down the street that could look me quite straight in the eye. I drove straight to the man on the far side of town where we stabled the sled and the team. Even Charlie, our friend, came on cold as a clam. It was crazy, like some kind of dream. He mumbled some stuff about feeding the dogs, and I said, "Dang it, Charlie, hold on. I come back to this town after 2 months away. You all seem to wish I'd stayed gone." "It ain't you," mumbled Charlie. "I guess you ain't heard. Been a killing that's got us undone. Good old Doc, he was shot with a Colt 44. And the thing is, it's your brother's gun." "You know better than that," was about all I could say, because it hit me like 2 ton of lead. "Where's he now?" "He lit out for the north with a team. We ain't seen him since Doc was found dead." I kept trying to puzzle it out in my mind, but I couldn't. My mind seemed to block. The one thing I knew, just as God is my judge, my brother could never hurt Doc. "Did you rent him a team? Did he say he'd be back? Can you give me just some place to start?" "Well," old Charlie said, "it was no team of mine. And you know that's not the funniest part. He came by just before this whole business came up, because we used to be sort of good friends, and he tells me he's heard where some white beaver run, way up north where the Bear Claw Ridge ends. The next day he was gone. He was seen driving north, and that morning the word's around town that old Doc has been killed and his place has been robbed and your brother's old gun's on the ground." My dogs needed rest, and I needed it too, but I guess it was not in the dice. I knew where he went, and I'd rather be sent down to hell for a bucket of ice. Those old ridges were treacherous, even in spring, and with winter now well underway, I'd be lucky to make it back safely myself. With my brother, there'd be hell to pay. I laid in supplies that I'd need for the trip, and before I turned in for the night, I dropped in for a chat with the Mountie in town, and it nearly turned into a fight. He was stuck on the notion my brother'd killed Doc. He was fixing to go bring him in. I told him my brother and Doc were good friends, but it seemed there was no way to win. Till I finally mentioned a fact that struck home, and I had him on our side at last. There was no way my brother could squeeze off a round with those fingers as stiff as a cast. I figured that one of the trappers that camped by the creek at the edge of the town had probably tried to rob Doc and been caught, and he panicked and shot old Doc down. Then he fed my poor brother that white beaver tail, and he gave him a sled and a team. When my brother lit out, he could lay blame on him, and my brother played into his scheme. If we found who it was that provided the dogs for the goose chase my brother was on, then we'd have us the killer, and that would be that. So I packed up to mush out at dawn. For a man who had half of the sense God gave geese, this whole trip was an idiot's trek. Just inhaling the gusts of fresh, wintry blast felt like splinters of glass in the neck. After 3 weeks, I'd moved to the crest of the ridge, at the northernmost tip of the chain. If the furies of winter were vicious below, at the top they could triple the pain. Though we both took a beating, the dogs and myself, I needed the height for the view of the region below where I'd figured he'd be. It's the best that I thought I could do. After 3 days of mushing that murderous crest, almost bled of the last drop of hope, I thought that I spotted a speck in the snow on the face of a far distant slope. It was instinct, not reason, that now set the pace. I could feel the lash making demands that the dogs couldn't meet, but I couldn't let up, because my brother's life lay in my hands. The couple of hours of sunlight had passed, and only the moon and the stars were left for the dogs to pick paths in the snow between icy crevasses and bars. By a miracle, God brought us through to the dawn, and although they survived the terrain, the pace was too much for a few of the dogs, because their hearts seemed to burst with the strain. I cut loose the traces wherever they dropped, and pushed on with the dogs that hung on. Every loss made it tougher on those that were left, and their will to survive was near gone. I was practically paralyzed, running on nerves, but each time that I'd look up ahead, there was no sign of movement, and that was the drive to press on when my muscles were dead. It was either next day or the day after that, I don't know, it was just kind of a blur, that I got to the spot where my brother lay curled on his sled under layers of fur. I scrambled as fast as my muscles could crawl, though the dread nearly drove me insane. There was nothing to do but to hug him and cry. God had loosed him from all of his pain. I think I passed out because the sun had gone down by the time I was able to move. I was hollow and empty in body and mind, but I knew I had something to prove. My brother was dead, and he couldn't care less. Even so, they had blackened his name. I was bound and determined to set the facts straight, if I died in the try all the same. I gave him a burial such as I could, and I said a few words to the Lord, and then back to the trail. There was no time for tears, though his loss cut my heart like a sword. I had only 3 dogs that could still pull a trace. Only one of my brothers could stand. But I figured that that would be more than enough if things worked out the way that I planned. I hitched up the 3 in a trace close to me, and I hitched up my brothers as lead. Then I fashioned a sack from the furs on the sled. It had all of the room that I'd need. There were 2 main concerns. One was making it back to the town before death pulled the shade. The second was finding the man who killed Doc, and I prayed that both points could be made. I fastened the sack to the trace and climbed in, like a moth in a furry cocoon. I yelled, and the dogs, without guidance from me, set a course for the sun at high noon. I knew that they'd head for the place they'd been fed, and the lead dog knew just where to go. He set them a pace like an Eskimo race for the home that he'd known down below. Without sled or supplies, my own weight on the trace was a feather they handled with ease. In exhaustion, my body cried out to go limp, but I knew if I did, I could freeze. I kept flailing my arms and my legs in the sack to send blood to my fingers and toes. In my dark little cave, there was no sense of time. Just how long it was, God only knows. I can only remember a fog rolling in, a sweet mist that enveloped my mind, and at some point in time I passed over the line to a rest of a different kind. It was bright and sublime, and it called me to climb to a height that I couldn't believe. I was ready to go, but some tug from below brought me back to the body I'd leave. I heard rumbles and murmurs, then voices I knew, and the mist that I loved seemed to part. I was back in a shed on a kind of a bed, and I heard the faint beat of my heart. They said I'd been out for a week since the day that the dogs hauled my body back in. I had bad signs of frost, but they got me in time, and they saved every inch of my skin. Like I figured, the lead dog had found his way home to the very last home that he'd known. He came back to the trapper who traded him off to my brother to use as his own. The Mountie had spotted us just as we'd planned, and he followed us right to the door of that trapper who later confessed to the crime. I figured that settled the score. That was 20 years back. Lord, it seems like a week. When I healed, I went back to the wild, like an animal caged in the prime of its life to run free, turned me back to a child. Together we've coursed God's majestic backyard, and we've not had one unfulfilled day. We've been unified spirits, my brother and me. He's been with me each step of the way.
Dear Interrogator, by James Salas. Thank you for asking these questions. I want you to know that I appreciate your skill, your professionalism, that in their wake, I've been led to reconsider many things. In other lives, we might have been friends. My turn to buy lunch, yours to pick the restaurant or coffee shop. I'd tell you about the woman I just met, how I can't get her out of my mind. So much begins with what we can't get out of our minds. In some future time, in this better world you were making, there will be a day and hour to celebrate what you and I understand. That the drum is hollow, made to be filled with sound.
Knowledge and Consent by Stephen D. Rogers. Begin the interview friendly, start neutral and easy and true. Once you develop a rhythm, that's when you throw in the screw. Wait for the changes in pattern, watch for the tick and the tell. Listen to timbre and volume, notice the facts that don't gel. Everyone lies about something, there's always a secret to hide. Separate guilt from the matter, of face-saving efforts at pride. Focus on getting the answers. Opened-end questions serve best. Prompt them to speak using silence. Press for the details, then rest. This is the way to solve cases, not fists and merciless lights. Before you gain their confession, did you remember their rights?
Serial Killer by Kevin Mims. You swore that you were Cocoa Puffs for me, and that we'd bid our Cheerios someday to bourgeois life and hop a special K to seek out kicks from sea to shining sea. But soon, it seemed your not-so-lucky charms were constantly in other lovers' arms. Applejack, Captain Crunch, and other fellows were constantly enjoying your marshmallows. I realized too late that you were Fruit Loops. At dawn, as sweet as frosted flakes, and then as brittle as a golden gram by 10. Your raisin bran was missing several scoops. Meanwhile, there's this sugar puff across the street who makes my insides crumble like shredded wheat. So if this morning's Cheerios taste a little funny, like bitter almonds, say, relax. It's nothing, honey.
Alternative Medicine by Marilyn Todd, read by Mandy Davis.
A lady, well thought of and nice, looks into the pharmacist's eyes. What I would like is some cyanide, she says to his surprise. The pharmacist reserves judgment, but, being quite unaccustomed, asked why she would like to buy cyanide. She replies, to murder my husband. Shocked to the core, his face is a mask. Phoning the cops will be his next task. Ma'am, I'm unwilling to condone any killing. I won't sell the poison you ask. I see your point, she hisses. Then in her bag she fishes. After a mo, hands him a photo of her husband in bed with his missus. This is no fiction. It fits the description of the man his wife met with, the dark-eyed Egyptian. He leans over the aisle and says, with a smile, you didn't tell me you had a prescription.
The Mask of Change by John Mercurio. So how did it happen, and how can we know why traditions have morphed from times long ago? From madmen and monsters and ghouls of the night came knights and saints, revered in sunlight. The Celtic druids of Britain and Ire laid roots of festival with sacred bonfire. The end of one year, the beginning of next, the cycle repeats like a bird to its nest. The ancients who feared visitations from the dead laid out their treats to entice them instead. And those still struck by the eternal's dread carved faces of light in a pumpkin's head. But time marches on, and with it comes change. Rome conquers the world, so much rearranged. All Saints' Day, the honoring of heroes long past, was preceded by evening, All Hallowed Eve's fast. Like the spin of a Rolodex, a tool vague in memory, is revival of ceremony from ancients aplenty. As a spa for the brain, again history repeats, things once thought lost are never complete. Holy day to holiday, break fast to breakfast, All Hallowed Eve to Halloween, the roping of ages binds thoughts, words, and deeds. They're shortened or altered, but long-lasting succeed. So where did it start and where does it end? Gifts loved by druids, trick-or-treats now befriend. Blow kisses when thinking, we hold top position. 'Tis a thought oft considered in long past traditions.
Murder Between the Pages by K.D. Hart.
Red herrings, clues, and suspects galore. Miss Marple, Holmes, and oodles more crowd my bookshelf and spill on the floor. Proof, a whodunit I do adore.
The Bicycle by Diane Yetman. Standing alone, abandoned at the end of the pier, swaying back and forth in the sea-blown gusts of wind, teetering on the edge of a collapse, a fragile kickstand and sweat-stained right handlebar looped round the slotted rails bearing its weight. A black, oil-dripping chain sagged close to the board, and the naked silver stem from the missing left petal shone brightly in winter's cold moonlight, but not the broken wheel spoke that was dulled with rust, jutting sideways, as sharp and dangerous to a passerby as the plunge of a porcupine's quill. Small frayed gloves lay in the bottom of the wire basket. A long, color-matched scarf wrapped around the railing whipped in the wind with deadly speed, its soft wool transformed by nature into a bone-smacking weapon. One small black shoe lay on its side by the back wheel, its tires wailing a piercing lamentation for the lost rider.
The poems included in this podcast are copyrighted in the order presented by John F. Dobbin, James Salas, Stephen D. Rogers, Kevin Mims, Marilyn Todd, John Mercurio, K.D. Hart, and Diane Yetman, respectively. Music for the podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing for the podcast were done by Jackie Sherbro and Ray Purdom. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreenmysterymagazine.com.